This episode of A Few Things with Claire and Erica is brought to you by Bed Bath & Beyond. Hit them up at bedbathandbeyond.com or go to one of their many stores. Welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica.
I'm Erica.
I'm Claire. And this is our podcast where we talk about things we love based on our newsletter, where we talk about 10 things we love.
10 things specifically. On this radio show, we don't talk about 10. We talk about
just a few.
Far less, because 10 is way too many for one podcast.
Yeah. And really for one newsletter, but we make it happen anyway. Thanks for adjusting these headphones. Oh, now I can't hear myself at all.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. But testing, still can't hear. It's fine though. I can hear myself talking in my in real life. Hello, hey, that's perfect. Nice work.
We sounded like we were basically screaming in our heads when we put on the headphones. I'm glad you got to hear that. That's
just getting an on
real life, real life
on the job education and engineering.
So what were you saying? You were saying we send a newsletter and it has 10 things in it, and then it is also based on a website that we have called Of a Kind, where you can buy the pieces and read the stories of emerging fashion and home designers. It's all real awesome. You should sign up for the newsletter. You should do lots of shopping. We recently launched a personal care shop that has been a GD. Hit.
A giant hit. We have included many of the products and tools from our daily grooming routines in this personal care shop, and people have been
digging it up. Yeah.
And so you probably should too.
We went through our whole personal care routines on the last two episodes of this podcast. So if you missed that, well, you are in for a treat, or at least like an hour and a half of listening.
An hour and a half worth of listening to exactly how we get ready in the morning.
Yeah, like how we put face oil on our faces. Like that kind of detail.
You know, the great debate, palms versus fingertips.
That was a hashtag that was circulated among a very small group on Twitter this week.
Starting things on the internet. It's great.
Okay, so this week we are kicking off with something very like brand new to Of a Kind, brand new to A Few Things, just brand new, not brand new to Oprah.
No. Oprah's been doing this for a while. Mark Zuckerberg's been doing it
for less time than Oprah.
And for even less time, we've been hosting a book club.
A book club.
Yes. This is the first official episode of Reading Things with Claire and Erica.
So if you have any recommendations, if you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, hashtag Reading Things or email us at afewthings@ofakind.com and we will hit you back.
That's right. So we told you guys like a month ago, we gave you
a decent heads up.
We gave you enough time to read this book, so we don't want any excuses. Today we are discussing Euphoria by Lily King.
Fact.
And something you should know about this book club, I think we do it a little differently than Oprah. We pick the book before we've read it. I feel like she would always like read
Vet
the book,
them.
Be like, I love
well,
this.
Well, I feel like she had a team.
Oh, you think she had bigger stakes?
Yeah. She's like, and I think she had a team read the books. We were like, ooh, that sounds good. That's how we're doing this.
Okay. Yeah. No, exactly. But so I was wondering, I was like,
What if this book sucks?
We're both obsessed with this book, but at some point, are we going to pick a book and then get on the podcast and have to go negative about it and be like, I wasn't
quite
that into
possibly.
It? Yeah, I don't know. So should we start with a synopsis of this book?
Yes, we should start with a synopsis of this book.
You're the storyteller.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this book is set in the 1930s in New Guinea, and it is about a trio of anthropologists. Mm-hmm. Two of them are married.
So Nell and Fenn are married.
Nell and Fenn are married. And Bankson is kind of this like, I don't know why for me they're like countries of origin played a really big part in this, which you and I talked about, whatever. So Nell is American. Fenn is Australian.
That's right.
And then they encounter this third anthropologist who like kind of starts off as a third wheel and then becomes very sort of central to their like whole deal. Bankson, who is kind of a sad sack Brit.
Totally. I kind of think, so we have this regular feature plan for the book club, and I kind of think it actually makes sense to start the episode with it to set the stage.
Ooh.
I think we should cast the movie now.
Okay.
So that for people following along, they can...
Even if they haven't read it, they can
visualize. I think that really helps in telling the story.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm into that.
Okay, so let's cast Nell. Did you have anybody in mind?
I had like a lot of people.
Oh, really? Because I really struggled with anybody other than Kate Winslet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Well, okay. Part of my struggle with casting in general is like the age range.
Yes.
I couldn't decide if this should, like, how old these people should be. Mm-hmm. If they should be in their like early 30s, okay, or if they should be in, because I thought, okay, early 30s felt right because she is like of childbearing age, and right, that is like very sort of key to the plot of the book. But then also they're academic, so childbearing age, if you're in academia, seems later.
Fair.
I don't know. Okay. So I had a handful of ideas. Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Very good. Very
She seems intellectual enough, and like she's pretty, but she's not.
She's totally the right type of pretty. So to further the plot here a little bit,
yeah,
the main character Nell is not even loosely based, but like very
aggressively
intentionally,
based.
Consciously based on Margaret Mead, the anthropologist.
Yes.
And
who, like, if you know the name of any anthropologist, it's probably that one.
Exactly. So, okay, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Michelle Williams.
Good one.
Also kind of like quiet and contained, which I think is a little bit for me. Nell. Claire Danes.
Okay.
Which you're not feeling, I can
tell. Just, she's so homeland now.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know. I don't know if
she feels too
branded.
She's
not like stoic enough for me to be this character.
Okay, and then this one felt a little out of left field, but I would be interested to see her in the role.
Okay.
Rose Byrne.
Too pretty. Way too pretty.
Okay. So of mine, your vote would be Maggie.
I thought Maggie was a great call.
That's great because in my notes, there's an exclamation point after
Perfect.
Her name. So
okay,
that bodes well.
I'm on board with that. Okay. So
who is Fenn? Fenn is a aggressive macho. Like, macho is such a weird word, but he's macho.
He's extremely.
So, he's chauvinist. So
he's also an anthropologist. He's Nell's husband. He is chauvinist, exceptionally masculine in every way, and
likes the hard labor of being like in these
he's
native environments.
Yes.
He is very jealous of any success that Nell has, mm-hmm, and kind of admonishes her for it,
right? And he's he's like primal in certain ways.
Primal,
you get the sense.
Totally.
Yeah. So I cast a couple of people. Mm-hmm. I cast two people who I was really struggling between: Clive Owen and Liev Schreiber.
Which are both very strong. I think Clive Owen is really strong.
I think Clive Owen is really strong. But then the other day when we brought this up again, we both landed on Ben Affleck and felt like, and since then I haven't been able to get it out of my head.
Because it's like that same kind of Gone Girl character where you're like, I don't know if he's a dick or not.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I mean, to be fair, in this book, there are parts of him, you're like, yeah, he's 100% a dick.
He really
beats his wife. Like, he's 100% a dick.
By the end of the book, you're like, he's a total dick. He probably, he probably killed his wife. So,
right,
he beat
it's
her.
Less questionable than
he's a really self-centered guy. So you've got Nell, also known as Maggie Gyllenhaal, and Fenn, also known as Ben Affleck. They are in the jungle together, husband and wife, sort of like basically business partners.
Because they're working on these projects side by side, so they are embedded. So they had been embedded with a very aggressive
tribe
that like committed infanticide. Infanticide. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really, for some reason, a really hard word for me today. Infanticide. And it made Nell really, really uncomfortable. Right. And she had a miscarriage while she was with them. And this all, you mm-hmm, kind of get glimpses of this throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Fenn makes fun of her a lot for like being scared off by their like murderousness.
And Fenn really liked it there and was really obsessed with basically getting to the bottom of what their customs were and what the story of this tribe was. And he felt like he was really close to basically figuring out what the map of this culture was. And Nell was like, we gotta
get out of here. Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Done.
So that's where the story starts. They're leaving this tribe and they sort of go to almost this like this, well, this like little
like
colonized
place.
Moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Colonized
place,
moment. Yeah.
Where they run.
And this is the 30s, to be like clear. Yeah. So that helps to give context
it's
to
like
the
a
interactions.
Yeah. It's like a hotel where it seems to be like mostly like British and British people. And they
like drinking fancy champagne in the middle of nowhere.
And that's where they meet Bankson.
And Bankson at this point has been on his own With his own tribe.
He's also an anthropologist.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't feel like the sense of ownership over his tribe in the same way that the same way that Fenn and Nell do. And he, it just feels like he's like,
he's a more gentle soul than either of them, it feels
totally.
Like.
Totally. And he's more just like taking it all in, and he's not confident at all in his work or what he's doing or what he's putting out there, if he's doing anything at all. Right. And you catch him in the beginning of the book when he, like, right after he tries to drown himself and is pulled out of the water by fishermen who are like, what are you doing? Like, get out of there, you dummy.
Yes, he's totally depressed.
And so he meets up with these two who he knows, who he has knows some relationship of, yeah. with. Yeah, he's like met them before.
Oh, right, he's met Fenn.
Yes. Right. And he basically is like, oh, like latches on and is like, oh my God, I need these people close to me because I am so alone and I need a friend.
Right. And so he basically, in order to keep them close to him, he introduces them to another tribe nearby, the tribe he's studying, so he can sort of intentionally keep them close so he can have friends who he can relate to. And so most of the book unfolds while these Nell and Fenn and then Bankson are studying two separate tribes about a 7-hour boat ride from each other.
Exactly. Okay, so wait, who is Bankson?
For me, it's Edward Norton. I haven't found anybody else better.
Okay, here's where mostly where I struggled, because my favorite person for this role, and I don't think you're going to like it, is Andrew Garfield. Because he's so sad in that way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But he's too young for the
He is. He looks about 12 years old.
He's too young, but I think if we had found other young
If we
cast
aged
members.
Him a bit. If we aged him a bit. I can see. I almost also think Andrew
Garfield.
He also
has that like furrowed brow that is. He's
I
always
almost
thinking.
Think he's a little too good looking.
I don't know. I feel like Bankson was like maybe really good looking, but like tall and gangly and lanky and like kind of bird-like.
Well, okay, so this is a good place to introduce the fact that they basically more or less everything we just set up for you happened in real life with Margaret Mead.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, so this is a fictional book, but this first part of the story that like sort of set up is more or less true to life, where she was her second husband, this guy Rio Fortune, who also abused her, and as we know because of letters she wrote him, she, you know, went into the field with and studied with him together, ended up having a love triangle with somebody whose real name was Bateson.
So Bateson. For 5 months they had this crazy love triangle, and according to, we listened to a Diane Rehm show.
Love Diane Rehm.
Claire like loves Diane Rehm.
Obsessed with Diane Rehm.
We listened to a Diane Rehm show. What do they call it? Reader discussion?
They call it the Reader's Review.
Reader's
not
Review.
Not quite as innovative as Reading Things.
No, absolutely not. So they had one of these sessions about this, and someone who had much more Margaret Mead expertise than us said that about the first half of the book holds true to the historical records.
Exactly.
So Lily King, the author, had read a biography of Margaret Mead years before she wrote this book and was like, this is pretty fascinating stuff. And that's the setup.
So in real life, Margaret Mead actually left Rio Fortune for Bateson. But what I read, because this book sent me into like a deep dive into Margaret Mead's life, and I read, you know, every Wikipedia entry associated with her, it was actually Bateson who left her for another woman.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then, as you noted, she basically gave up on men after that.
So over the course of Margaret Mead's life, and this very much ties to her work because it was like very much about being open sexually to experiences, and that's a lot of what she studied and wrote about. She had three husbands and then two lesbian relationships.
Right.
One, the last one of her life, she lived with a woman for like 20 years.
And the lesbian sort of aspect of her identity is alluded to in the book as well.
Yeah.
And you basically get the sense that she sacrificed her true love, who was a woman, in order to sort of go along with what was expected of her and marry this guy, Fenn.
Yes, which is really interesting given the context of everything she's studying and everything she cares about. And I read an interview with the author, and she says at some point that when people ask her now if what's true and what's not, she doesn't remember, which is really fascinating.
You're
just like, yeah, exactly. Well, fall down so deep.
Which is also, I think, speaks to the sort of kind of like controversial subject of anthropology as a whole, where it's really hard to know when you read anthropological accounts what is true, what is objective, what what is accurate, because when you know somebody goes and sort of situates themselves with a foreign culture, the question is like, how much is the culture reacting to this foreign body there, and that is very much, and how much are they imbuing the story that, how much is the anthropologist imbuing the story that they're telling with their own sort of subjective, you know, insights into all of this stuff. And that is very much a theme throughout the book, just sort of like what is the ethical way to give an account of a foreign culture?
Right. Right.
Which I also loved so much, because I don't know if it, I think it was really impactful for you too, but we both read this book in college that a lot of people who went to University of Chicago had to read and become really obsessed with. But it's by Emile Durkheim, and it's called Elementary Forms of Religious Life. And it has, it's kind of similar to reading Euphoria, but in a much more academic way.
Totally.
Durkheim was one of the first anthropologists, and he goes into similarly sort of like primal tribes and comes up with this theory of ritual as being really key to culture, basically.
Yep.
And this idea of collective effervescence, which, yeah, it just, it was such a college moment for me personally.
And we used to talk about collective effervescence pretty regularly.
It just felt like it explained so much. And there's this passage in this book that I was like, I underlined it 6 times, and I was like, Durkheim, religion, collective effervescence, 6 exclamation points, where so it's Nell, the main character, describing something, and she says Fenn claims that if you just let go of your brain, you find another brain, the group brain, the collective brain, and that is an exhilarating form of human connection that we have lost in our embrace of the individual, except when we go to war, which is my point exactly. And it's just, this all like goes back to this worldview that Durkheim presents, where the more you get into it, you're like, I can totally apply this to politics, to religion, to sports, to everything
sports
you look
in
around.
Such a big way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this definitely, this drummed up all of my sort of like passionate college feelings about Durkheim.
100%.
Yeah.
Should we go to commercial and come back and talk about Nell? Because I feel like we need to do a deep dive.
Oh, so much. Yes. So we've been shopping at Bed Bath & Beyond for a gazillion years, just like everybody else out there, at least as recently as college, which is when I can remember, because I remember running into my crush and his mom in the parking lot of Bed Bath & Beyond while we were both shopping for college things. But I think I've been shopping there even before then. It's good stuff.
It's a classic.
It is a classic.
But now that Of A Kind is part of the Bed Bath & Beyond family, Bed Bath & Beyonce, as we are trying to rebrand it.
Why not, though? It's a good one.
I feel like
Beyonce would be fine with it.
Totally.
She wouldn't ask for money at all.
Mm-mm. We've gotten to spend a lot more time exploring all of the crazy impressive products that the store carries, and we've honed in some of the greatest hit, the sort of timeless, classic, pretty stuff that we want filling our cabinets and our closets.
If you're not heading there for Japanese knives, for the Le Creuset Dutch ovens, for the Miele vacuums, for the Freta bedding, what are you doing?
What are you
get
doing?
Get over there. They have all that stuff.
Yes. Get your butt to a store, stat.
And sign up for their newsletter, stat, because guess what? You get a 20% off coupon for a single item. Boom.
Hi.
Hey, we're back.
You've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica, and this is hashtag reading things. I shouldn't say hashtag out loud. That's really
no, I liked it. I like spelling out hashtag instead of actually using
it. It's better.
Yeah. Analog hashtagging.
This is the first installment of our book club.
Yes.
We are discussing Lily King's Euphoria.
Such a good book.
Really.
The other thing
we talked about how much we really like this book.
It was so good. I read it during hashtag Jonas, the mm-hmm. Blizzard.
We knew which one.
Yeah,
Not during a Nick Jonas concert.
No.
Okay.
And it is just, if you haven't read it yet, just do it because it's one of those ones. It takes like 4 hours and you have to do it all in one sitting because it sucks you in from the very first sentence. It's so good.
True.
I'm not a patient reader. Erica's really patient. And so, you
I don't know.
I feel, well, you read so much. And if I'm not sucked in immediately, I don't finish the book. But this sucked me in immediately and I finished it all in one day. And I just loved it so dang much.
Okay. So one of the things that we really loved about this book is the main character, who is this really strong, kind of defiant woman, Nell, who
obsessed with her,
who is based on Margaret Mead and who's just very strong willed. And
she's just a total badass. Also, yeah. Like, remember, this is 1930s and she's not only at the top of her game and the top of her industry. It's, I don't know if you can call it an industry. That's probably not the right
word. She's a writer. So, yeah, she's a book in the book selling industry.
Yeah, she's the most famous anthropologist around, which is awesome. And going places that women don't typically go. And it's sort of part, you know, a big part of the book is that her husband is clearly so jealous of her. And that creates a lot of the tension between the two of them, because she's had this really successful book that becomes popular outside of just academia. And it, you know, he's like, you can tell he's not entirely comfortable with his wife being more successful than he is.
No. And there's this part in the book that we both were obsessed with where she's getting all this fan mail about her first book, which is about, the like sex habits of a previous tribe that they had been embedded with, and basically talks about, you know, how these children are sexualized very young and how there's no such thing as like natural or unnatural. And so she gets all of these letters about her book and about her work. And he's like so crazy jealous of her, and she gets all these awards and whatever. And she feels like she can't appreciate them at all or really like take a moment to be like, wow, this is awesome that I've been able to accomplish this thing.
Well, so it speaks so much to gender dynamics, and it also speaks so much to, I think, the complications of running a business or not running a business, being business partners or being, you know,
working with.
That's what I'm looking
working
for. Working
with
your romantic partner, which, you know, if
we
you
see
can
a lot
do
of this
it,
in
we
our
see
lives.
A lot of it,
yeah.
And more power to you for all of you out there, our friends included, who are doing it and making it work. But I can't imagine it. And I think the thing that kills me so much about it is summed up so well in this passage. She says, it's like one sentence. She says, once I published that book and my words became a commodity, something broke between us. Because it's like these words, that this passion that they shared and that they loved talking about before it became a commodity, all of a sudden became this thing of value that they had to treat differently. And before that, it was just like they had that romantic passion of talking about something that you loved so much, and that the energy surrounding it just changes completely when all of a sudden it's a commodity and a feather in her professional cap in that way.
Completely. And at some point in that same section, she says something about, would it be easier if I were married to a banker?
Which, you know,
that is the eternal question.
Don't we all, basically? Yes. It was, I LOL'd so hard because haven't we all felt that way? The other thing that is so interesting about their marriage, and Lily King is just so clever. Every sentence is so rich in this way in this book, but the way that they split up the subjects that they study. And so, you first hear it from Bankson, who's sort of like reporting what he finds out about them. And he says, Fenn's about religion and religious totems, ceremonies, warfare, and genealogy. Nell's about economics, food, government, social structure, and child rearing. So the idea is that they have this really clear division, and it's basically traditional gender lines.
Like British or American gender lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then later on in the book, Nell is you're reading Nell's diary, and she says, I have asked, she's complaining because her husband's not doing his assignments, basically, and he's not doing this. So she says, I have asked to trade food and nutrition, which I have already covered sufficiently, for kinship and politics, but he refuses. So I will have to take it all on in secret, which feels also just so like actually what happens today. And it's
I will
a symbol
have
for
to take it on in secret.
Like, I'm just going to have to do this work and not talk about it or complain about it because it's not getting done otherwise. And it just feels like so many women do so much work that's not talked about, or, you know, they pick up the sort
the
of
slack.
Of
Exactly.
So
something else I thought was interesting is that she's referred to by her first name, and they're both referred to by their last name or a portion of their last name, which feels like a very
all, but that's
like a
so
professional. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's like a sort of male female thing in general.
Totally.
But I think in this professional context, the idea that she wasn't referred to by her last name, and that seems to be kind of a standard.
So interesting.
Says something.
So the other thing that I was obsessed with through this book
yeah.
is I just feel like she was born so far before her time because she could have been the original social media celebrity because throughout the book, she is constantly talking about how, you know, they're in the canoe going to the tribe they're going to study. And all she can think about is all the tribes she's missing out on that she's not getting to study and how she's constantly convinced that there's a better way to live, which drives this passion for her. And she's like, you know, she thinks if she just keeps studying all these tribes, she'll find the best way to live. And it's the ultimate FOMO.
Totally.
And then she takes that FOMO and she translates it to this need to just broadcast all of the stories of everything she finds. So it's constantly talking about how for her, it's not about the experience of being there. It's about coming home and telling the story. And so she's always got a notebook, and at one point she like stitches.
So she can blog about it.
Yeah, so she can blog about it. Exactly. She's like, she's so desperate for Instagram to be invented.
Totally.
And it's amazing because that becomes this tension between her and her husband where he just wants to live in the moment, and she's like, why aren't you writing it down? And he's like, I'm experiencing it. And she's like, but you got to write it down. You got to have your notebook with you at all times. And
I'm just like living life.
Right. And he is basically like, you're not living in the moment. And she's like, right, because I got to Instagram this for my followers.
Totally.
This is that
conflict.
She has the worst
rendered
FOMO
in 1930.
Yes, worst FOMO of all time, like biggest need to just broadcast everything she's doing. And I'm like, that's it. Anthropologists were the original social media celebrities.
Totally. I love that. Two other things I want to hit on before we close out. One, the cover of this book, which is so pretty,
beautiful.
And it looks like a painting. It is not.
No.
It is a photo of a rainbow eucalyptus tree, which is native to New Guinea. And apparently when the like colored bark appears when the outer bark sheds, it's just so dang,
it's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
I can't believe it's not a painting.
We had gotten an email from someone who was like, I'd had that book on my shelf and I really liked looking at it because it was pretty anyway, but now I guess I'll read it. So, you know, that was a nice thing. And then if we want to get into like a tiny bit of further reading, mm-hmm. if you like this, you might like that. Basically my analog Amazon algorithm.
I love
it. Hope you really like it.
Yeah.
So there's also some more pro tips on that front in the back of the book if you have the book club version or the reading guide version. But Poisonwood Bible feels like a very, mm-hmm. very classic one. This used to be one of my favorite books. I haven't read it in a long time, but it's about a missionary family that goes to the Congo in 1959. So there's that same sort of like sense of othering. And you get this like take from the kids, from the parents, you get everyone's perspectives. Two of Ann Patchett's books, State of Wonder, which I have to say I liked less, is about a doctor who goes to the Amazon to look for her mentor who went missing when he was doing research for some crazy drug. And then Bel Canto, which seems like it's less relevant, but it really is. It's about like love in a foreign place where you don't really understand the customs. And it is about opera that takes place at the vice president of some South American country, you don't know which one, at his house. And
I'm into this.
There's a hostage situation and they're held hostage. There's like a terrorist invasion. They're held hostage for, I think, months. And there are like all of these trysts and love triangles that come out of it. And yeah, it's really, really good.
In the spirit of 10 things, and being tangential, I have to recommend, though I've never read any of her books, Ann Patchett's Terry Gross interview is phenomenal.
Oh, I have listened to that. It's really good. Ann Patchett is really charming.
Good. I've never read any of her books, but this is just one of the most wonderful, like, sort of life-affirming interviews and she's just so smart and wise, and you just wish that she were like your aunt.
She also owns a big bookstore in Nashville, which makes her even more charming. Paranus Bookstore, I think it's called. And so maybe that's worth supporting on the internet, even if you're not in Nashville. And the last one is The People in the Trees, which is also about an anthropologist who finds a lost tribe that, like, they don't live forever, but they live a real long time. And it's because of this turtle meat that they eat.
That's the secret.
Yeah, it's turtle meat. And it's the tale. It's sort of his downfall. There's some like child molesting stuff in here. It's like kind of a creepy one, but it's sort of this taking a really dark turn, even though this ending is already pretty sad, but it's a really dark
turn. We didn't even talk about the ending. Was that intentional? We didn't want to spoil it for
people. I think
we
don't want to spoil it.
I had a lot of thoughts about the ending on this.
Should we talk about it?
Well, I'm going to spoil it. If you haven't read it,
turn
this off now. she, throughout the book, you get the sense that Nell really wants a baby. And at the end, she basically, you get, she dies pregnant, and you don't know whether or not Fenn, like, just beat her to a pulp or she miscarries. She, like, died from complications from the pregnancy. But so much of this book's carries that theme of, like, work, women in the workplace and women in business and, like, badass women who are breaking molds. And the idea of this main character having a baby seems almost like, you know, it would completely change the course of her career. And then instead
how do you spend all your life with how do you spend all your life in New Guinea with that, with this tiny little baby,
with a kid?
And I mean, then, obviously people in New Guinea have babies, but you know
right,
what I mean.
Yes, yeah. No, exactly. How do you have this career and raise a child? And then she doesn't, because when she had that, like, trying to have a child kills her. And the symbolism there I found to be so crushing and depressing, although the in real life Margaret Mead did have at least one daughter. I
yes.
know, so it, so it, real life is potentially less
and
depressing.
In real life, if you guys want to feel better, mm-hmm. Margaret Mead does leave the Fenn-esque character yes. for Bankson, at right. least. It's not like a happy ending.
Right.
It's like short-term happy ending.
She
gets out of this. Yeah,
yeah,
completely.
Okay.
All right, so all last right. thing we need to say yes. is we are doing another installment of this book
of
club.
Of reading things.
It is called The Sleepwalker's Guide to Dancing by Myra Jacobs.
I'm so excited. So last night, I got nervous. I was like, I don't know if I have enough time to read it. So last night, I downloaded it on my Kindle, and I started to read it. And I had been really tired. And within the first page, I actually had to shut off my Kindle because I was like, this book is so good that it's like, yeah, it's
this
like getting
good.
Me. It like woke me up. And I was like, okay, I got to turn it
well,
off.
Well, this one's a little longer than our first one because we think you guys are up for a challenge. And so we're going to talk about it on March 30th. So we're also giving everybody a little more time and ourselves. And it is about an Indian American family, and it tracks them over the course of two decades. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, sounds interesting.
It opens with a good like mother daughter sort of fighting on the phone moment, and I was like so pulled in immediately. It was like, this is waking me up too much. I need to go to bed.
On that note, download it, the Sleepwalker's Guide to Dancing. Just search for Sleepwalker's Guide to Dancing and you'll get there.
You'll get there. Or buy the real
and it's a debut. It's a debut.
Yeah,
well, you can still search for it to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a debut, which is also really exciting.
All right.
That's the show.
See you next time.
Follow us. Follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, all that jazz. You've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We're here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter on ofakind.com. Bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.